With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green. It's Wednesday, the 31st of March, and this is Game On.
Coming up tonight, there's a rocky road ahead, but Stephen Kenny is backing himself.
You know, you've everyone coming out of the woodwork now wanting to kick us while we're down, and that's all right. And that's the gig we're in, and that's part of it. You have to accept that. But I have great belief in the players that we have in this squad, and I think we're going to formulate a very, very good squad over the next couple of years. And I'm certainly going to be a part of that. I'm going to manage that, and I'm going to make sure we're even better. And that's the way I genuinely feel.
Swimmer Shane Ryan is full of confidence in both himself and his Irish teammates ahead of the Tokyo Olympic Games.
I'm a world medalist. I'm a European medalist. So now I think the next one would definitely be an Olympic medal. And I think things can work out really well, not only just for myself, but just for Ireland alone. Like, we have so many relays that could possibly qualify as well, which is exciting. We could be sending the biggest team of swimmers to the Olympics from some Ireland.
Sticking with hockey, hockey star Chloe Watkins is with us as she is aiming to reach more high moments like this.
She's done brilliantly. Chloe Watkins has scored, and now Lola Riera simply must score, or Spain are out and Ireland are in the Hockey World Cup final.
Plus, we have lots of rugby news to bring you with Fiona Coughlin, and Damien Lawler maps out the GAA season ahead.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM. We would love to hear from you. Marie, how are we doing?
Good. A little bit better than yesterday, I think, because everybody was very down about the Ireland performances. Last night, they drew against Qatar. They weren't amazing. They weren't terrible. It was somewhere down the middle, but at least they managed to get a goal and they didn't lose.
Yeah, very true. Do you think, you know, we went through the squad last night. Do you think including the older players bringing a bit of experience help back into the squad?
Yeah, I think he kind of needed to do it. He needed to, I suppose, for them and for everybody at home as well, just to give them a run out to see what they were up against. And I think the James McLean goal at the start showed that he had made the right call in starting the likes of them anyway. Just unfortunately, they kind of faded from it. There were times, I think, probably in the first half anyway, that we thought they were going to maybe go out and win the game, and towards the end as well, there was a couple of chances there. But he's tried everything now at this stage, so he's sticking to his philosophy, though. He said that afterwards. He's been very bullish about it. He believes in his players. He believes in his young players. He believes in his old players, and he believes in what he's doing. He's had to face a huge amount of criticism, and look, in ways, rightly so. 11 games played, no wins, only 4 goals scored and 9 conceded. It is hard to argue with those numbers, but at the same time, there is an appetite for change as well, and there is a lot of people there that are going to back him and have patience and see him as somebody who's being brave, and that realise that it's just going to take a little bit of time to change Irish football from what it was and to try and move it into a style of play that is closer to what's been played around Europe.
I must say I like him. I like the way even he came out, and he's not afraid to say, you know, in media that, you know, everyone's having a go at us now because we're down and we're taking it. But I just admire him for saying, I'm going to drive it on and take it forward. And I think that can be very tough, especially when it's not going well. I think people can look for easy outs, but he's not shirking responsibility, but saying that he's the man to turn it.
Yeah, and I think as well, probably, he said he was asked if he was hurt, and I'm going to play that clip in a second, by some of the criticism. And, you know, he said he doesn't care, but at the same time, the people that are come out criticising him are people that have played for the Republic of Ireland as well. So I think it's difficult when it's former players and former managers that are coming out sticking the boot in. But he was asked today, or last night actually, if he was hurt by some of the criticism, and this is what he had to say.
Now, to be honest with you, Gavin, I've experienced a lot in my life, and I feel really strong. I don't, to be honest with you, it doesn't hurt me, because you know what, I don't care. I know what I'm doing, very clear what I'm doing, real clarity in what I'm trying to implement, and I don't care what anyone says. I'm very clear what I want to do, and that, you know, it's irrelevant to me what other people think, to be honest with you. But there are people coming out of the woodwork that want to kick us while we're down, and that's very evident, and maybe that's to be expected. But Some people have turned very quickly, and I think I think we will get back on track, and we will have give the Irish supporters a team that they can be really proud of.
Yeah, strong words there from him. And I'd say even still, there's probably a bit of a split opinion on whether he should have been so vocal about what he's going to continue to do, whether he should have just finished the game, kind of said his piece and moved on to the training camp that they're going to have in the summer and then on to the rest of the qualifiers. But I feel he probably had to come out fighting Dunnigan. He had to come out and back himself and back his players and back what he's trying to do. It's not an easy position to be in. There's the fact as well that he's a League of Ireland manager, and there's people going to be questioning whether he's at the level. There's people questioning the players, the systems, everything about him. And he took that opportunity last night speaking to Tony O'Donoghue afterwards, and then in the later on press conference there, he's talking to Gavin Cooney, and he just backed himself all the way, and you really have to admire that, because it's not an easy position to be in.
No, not at all. But the I think, regardless of what happens, if he can stay true to himself the whole way along it, and maybe he's right or he's wrong, and time will judge it. And look, being honest, at international level, it's only judged on results. I know everyone will say we'd like us to play attractive football, but I just know from playing at Marie, people don't care if you win 3-0. They just, when it comes to rugby, they just want the result at international level. So, look, I think he won't be affected by the things outside. I think it will annoy his family a little bit, and people that love him and care about him, that they're always the ones that get hurt, because you use it as fuel. You use it as, I'm going to show them all. And there's no doubt, and Stephen Kenny will do that. It's, can he get the buy-in now in the bunks from the players? Because, to be fair, that's what he needs. He needs backing from his room as well, and backing from the organisation. He needs everyone to have his back and want him to do well. It's right that people, are critical when we're not going as well as we'd like, but inside has to support and help.
Yeah, well, he did, as we saw, he made massive changes, and the likes of Brady, McLean and Long and Duffy, and all, they all got their run and they got their chance. So there's a little bit of a break now, and I think a much needed break for everybody, because I don't think that people can keep talking about it and keep listening and keep reading, because there's been so much analysis. So it is nice, I think, for everybody to get a little break from it, and all those people involved included.
Yeah, but it doesn't get easier from those. Next up, Portugal in September. I'd say he's counting down the days.
There's a couple of friendlies in the summer as well. There's Andorra and they're playing someone else as well. I can't think right now who it is, but yeah, they do have a few friendlies that we'll no doubt be watching and analysing. Tonica, let's move on, because I think we've given it probably quite enough airtime over the last 3 days. A little bit of rugby news that we didn't get to yesterday. Munster have signed another lock, Jason Jenkins, ahead of the next season. So he's South African, he's 25 years of age, he has one Springboks cap to his name. All the stats look good. We will be talking a little bit later to swimmer Shane Ryan about height and weight. So this guy is 6'7", 125 kg, and seems like he has it all, but do they need him?
I think at this point, when you lost someone like Billy Holland and CJ, there is a gap in your squad. You would, for me as a Munster man, I would always prefer to plough those blocks with homegrown talent, the likes of Thomas O'Hearn, like we've seen, Paddy Kelly, Keane Hurley. They're quality players that are coming in, but you can understand why you would want quality players around the place. I know he was highly sought after from the Blue Bulls. He has been playing in Japan, which has improved. Normally players in Japan, Marie, were cashing in, were looking to get a bit of money, but that league has improved and got an awful lot better. Just from a personal Munster point of view, I would honestly prefer if we had one of our own guys plugging the gap. But that's on the coaching ticket. If they feel that they need extra players from outside, I can understand it with CJ and Billy going. I think there's merit in it from that side. But players signing for 1 year deals, I would rather one of our young fellas was given the opportunity to fill that space.
I think as well, probably the message that it sends as well, when you're losing some homegrown players like JJ and some of those young lads that would have had designs on moving up the pecking order, and for someone else to be brought in, it is difficult, and it probably isn't a great message to be sending out, I guess, to people who are trying to make their way.
Yeah, absolutely, and just really bad timing as well. Like you said, it was announced, we'd all heard the rumours that JJ was heading to Clermont and then Darren Sweetenham heading to La Rochelle. So when you lose two of your good guys, and I promise you, they'll go over there and light it up. Like, Ron O'Gara sees something in Darren Sweetenham. Razzy Rasmus, World Cup winning coach, saw something in Darren Sweetenham, and he just hasn't been getting a look in here. And I think he's always been an exciting player for me. And to be fair, we go on about the wave of talent that's coming through from West Cork. Well, he was the fella that set the blaze, you know. Mm-hmm. He was the guy that set it out. So I think timing of the message was, disappointing, especially after the performance at the weekend as well. So, look, of course, you have to have faith in the coaches and the management and that they know what's right. But it is tough to take as a player or as a supporter.
Yeah, and as a player, maybe a younger player who's trying to get along, they'll have to buy their time a little bit longer.
Yeah. But they can rip it off his back as well, though, Marie.
Yes, I'll be they honest can. With you. If they're listening, Donegal has advice there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's opportunities.
When John Langford came back for the second time, I remember myself, Paul O'Connell and Mick O'Driscoll just sitting down and saying, every session, we just clip him.
So, brilliant. Right, well, yeah. If Jason Jenkins is listening as well, he might not like the sound of that. So another little bit of news as well, Donegal, before we take a break and move on to Gaelic Games. We'll also have Fiona Coughlin on a little bit later as well, previewing the Women's Six Nations. So this year's Champions Cup and Challenge Cup are not going to be staged in Marseille due to the pandemic. I guess it was probably expected at some stage, all right. I think what they'll probably do is just wait and see how it progresses and what the teams are and just try to reduce and minimise the risk of COVID-19 transmission by reducing that cross-border travel. So that does make sense, really.
It does, and it's what happened at the end of last year, Marie. And look, things need to be flexible now. It would be great, and everyone loved it. You booked your tickets for the final, not even knowing where your team there, but you could pick a destination. But those days are gone at the moment. So we'd really love if it was two Irish teams and it could be played in Parky Cueve. That would be ideal, wouldn't it?
Yeah, a few people at it wouldn't be so bad either. Okay, let's take a very quick break and then we're back with Damien Lawler, who is going to hopefully outline what could happen with the GAA.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm On the Go Chicken Bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. So yesterday we were delivered some news, and that was that GAA senior inter-county teams can return to collective training from the 19th of April. Cabinet gave approval for that yesterday. Damien Lawler is with us now just to tease out what this could mean for the fixtures and the championship and the league and underage and everything. Damien, how are you?
I'm good, Marie. I'm good, Donegal. Probably yesterday's news, It was definitely welcome. I suppose I'm just looking at the whole kids thing, April 26th, but I guess there's a lot of work to be done between then and now getting ready for that. But I'd just love to see the kids back a little bit sooner, Marie. It's been a big ask of them, you know.
It really has.
While,
terrible,
yeah, and you guys will know this. Like,
yeah.
It depends on what club you're involved in, but at times, like, underage training can be a bit too much. There can be too much of it, and many, I think my young lad has played more games in his underage career. He's only 9 than I have in my whole life, I think. And the demands can be non-stop. You can be gone at 9 o'clock in the morning coaching teams and be back about 1 o'clock before you actually go working yourself. So I think a few people were saying, grand to have a break for a while, and maybe it needs to calm down a little bit, but they're probably at a stage now where they wouldn't do a huge amount of harm outdoors at the moment. But again, I know scientists and I know public health experts, so mm-hmm. we have to trust. And to be fair, Marie and Donegal, at one stage last year, the health questionnaires were coming into GAA headquarters at the rate of 8 per second. And by that, I'm trying to say 700,000 people were back in activity, 500,000 playing members. And that's a massive, massive operation to get back in vogue. So the GAA probably are welcoming the few weeks to get ready for it, because with tutorials, protocols, all those questionnaires, the re-education process, that all needs to be kind of ramped up again in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I think, and that goes for all sports really, Damien, across the board. They're all going to be all very busy now trying to get everything going. The WhatsApps will be hopping over the next few weeks. We've actually started, we've started just trying to keep the kids interested, putting blindfolds on them and trying to get them to kick the ball over the bar, and they're having great crack doing it, actually. If anybody is looking for a bit of a challenge over the next few weeks, it's just something,
if we can keep,
something different.
If we can't keep your kids interested in sport, then we're all in trouble, to be honest about it.
But isn't there a point in that, Damien? It just say, of course, we're lucky there's some kids that love it, but there's some kids as well that it might be their only hour of exercise in the week, or the importance of, you know, just for health and being out.
We were sometimes told, like, I mean, I have a massive interest in coaching, and I go to all the conferences. I've tried to help out a number of underage teams at club in Intercounty, and I was often told, you know, in terms of maybe a player who maybe would be sticking out, in terms of maybe needing a word, just to go easy, because that hour could be the highlight of his week or her week. And because I coach Camogie team here too, and that's exactly what you're saying, Dunica. It's a social outlet. It's an interaction place for them, and then it's physical exercise on top of that. And you know, up to a certain age, it's all fun anyway, and it should be fun. So you're 100% right. And I guess by me saying that she'll be back in the pitch, that's what I mean, really. The social interaction is a massive, massive thing. And like, especially with girls' sport, they go because of their friends. They need more role models, you know, and that's coming now. We can see that. But they go because of their friends, and that's what they miss. And that's at a very young age. And then they develop the skills, and then they get into the sport even more. But same with the young lads too. So look, at the sooner it comes back, the better. April 26th, we'll hop around pretty quickly in that regard.
So what are we looking at then, Damien, for the senior game? Are we going to have a league, or what way do you think it's going to play out?
We are definitely going to have a league. We are now in a situation where GAA are currently, as we speak, I would imagine, trying to plan out or plot out the road ahead. Three committees have to meet: the COVID Advisory Group, the Central Competitions Control Committee, and then their findings and their proposal and their format will be ratified by a management committee. We should be in a position then late next week to get a formal roadmap outlined ahead. I'm led to believe there will definitely 100% be a national league. And I'm also led to believe that there will be a 13 or 14 day period between league and championship. Speculation there, maybe you might lose a week of that if there's time pressures. But to outline it broadly, all going well, you're going to have an Allianz League. It'll be regionalised in football. They'll have to come up with a format in hurling yet. That's up for grabs at the moment. They're contacting counties about that as we speak. You know, that will probably be run off over maybe 5 or 6 weekends. You'll take a break then for a week or two. You'll go straight into your championships. There'll be provincial championships. And it'll be straight knockout, I think, or I'm led to believe, in football. And you'll have one backdoor safety net in hurling. So similar to last year. That'll bring you all the way through to your All-Ireland series. It possibly looks like the club will be starting then much later than anticipated, but I think the teams were due back initially intercounty training around the 19th of January, Murray, with the league starting maybe the middle of February. So everything's been pushed back by 3 months, and it means that the club window is probably narrowed a little bit, but there'll still be plenty of time. It could be maybe into August, September, October, November. Here's where it gets a little bit interesting. You've got 11 county finals or county championships from 2020 still outstanding. You've got the minor hurling and football competitions from 2020 outstanding, and you've got the under 20 hurling competition still outstanding as well. And for the likes of an Offaly, who were in the Leinster minor final in both codes, they want to get those played. It's a massive, massive step back for them, and step back on the road, I mean, and they want to play those. So you've got to complete the county championships from 2020. They're a priority. And then you have to play the club campaign for 2021. The GAA wants the whole provincial and All-Ireland series for this year as well. So I could see that, at worst case scenario, tipping over into 2022. But there's a definite will to play a meaningful games programme. I think it's going to be outlined like how I put it forward there. The question marks for me really come with the under-20s and the minor for 2021. I'm not sure where they're going to be positioned, because it's probably already bordering on leaving cert territory that you'd be running those golf. So they could be later in the year. They could also be vulnerable to the under-20s especially. That'd be a shame if that happened, but I think the GAA will do everything they can to try and play that if they can.
And Damien, just on the obviously it's elite sport, and it's really only about 2% of the whole playing population now that are being mobilised, but is there a worry about having a club championship later on in the year and what could happen? I know we're just listening to the news there and like we're waiting for vaccinations, but who knows how that's going to play out and also what number wave we could be on by the end of the summer.
Yeah, there is a worry. There is a worry. And I think, I suppose I was going to kind of preempt everything I said there by all this is conditional on the public health advice and the numbers being low. On the current government plan, you need to be around level 2, level 3 for club to be even considered. So we're miles off that. However, there is a realisation that in non-contact pods of 10, the club needs to get back at some stage too, because as you say, Marie, it's the majority of the membership. You'd be hoping that would come around May or June, that they'd be back training at least and that they have a chance to play some league games before the championship can take place. What Enfield will look for really is the number of cases in the community, how the vulnerable are protected, and the success of the vaccine rollout. The vaccine rollout up to now has been quite slow, but I think even in the past 7 days, you can see a fairly significant ramp up in that. And if that were to continue, and if the majority of your population was vaccinated around that period, I think then that maybe it'd be very, very hopeful of the club coming back. And it's a massive, massive thing for the club to come back, because every parish in Ireland is involved. 2,200 clubs, everybody has an invested stake in that, whereby the elite are the inter-county, but we certainly need, club can't go back at the moment because the level we're at, but inter-county can. So I just think we should be glad of any activity whatsoever at this stage, but there's massive unknowns, and I think the plan that the GAA formulate will have to take into account the variables that we don't yet know, and they'll have to work within the window that's been given to them.
Damien, on that, we do know the inter-county season, and that must be great for players. I know that, like Marie said, it's a small percentage of the population, 2%, but at least they can now plan their training routine so that, because that probably was a hindrance, I'd say, to inter-county players last, trying to find the perfect time to peak, and now they have a 4-week window to get ready.
Yeah, Donica, and at least they can stop texting me then, trying to find out when they're coming back, because I tell you one thing.
Name and shame.
I swear to God. I don't know how. I'm supposed to know, but you nearly have a press release sent out. But no, I actually love getting the text, because you can just see the frustration dripping off these people. And Donica, you've put it on the head there, really. They have been doing individual Zoom classes, Zoom table quizzes, Zoom social nights. They've been doing all the individual training themselves. They've transformed the sheds into gyms, the kitchens into gyms, their bedrooms. They're trying to keep an eye on the diet the whole time. Medicine balls, core work, all of that. And I've actually had a few managers say to me that they're amazed with the data readings they were getting back from their players, that they're in physically great nick. However, in the past 2 weeks, the one word that keeps coming up is flatness. You know, and like, I suppose we're getting to the stage, Do you taper off their program now a little bit and see what's going to happen, or do you ramp it up? So I think now, thank God, the information is out there. I think maybe generally, lads, there was a hope that we might align with the North in the 12th of April, but I think the Enfield recommendation is a week after that. So it's not that far away either. And I think even what we just discussed, the fact that they'll be back in their groups again, the fact that they'll be back seeing each other again, that will drive everybody on. I mean, they'll all want to pick up from where they left off last year, and some teams will have a lot to make up for, and other teams will want to build on the progress they made last year. So, it's a huge, huge development. I think the GAA kind of summarised it well last night in that it was a hugely welcome development, but they're quite cautious about it too, because as you said, Marie, that is, this situation is a year on, like 13 months on, it's just changing so often. And I mean, I thought the numbers yesterday and today were quite good, but you're hearing then we're on the cusp of the fourth wave the whole time if things were to go wrong over a week or two.
Yeah, and I know that Larry McCarthy said yesterday, he warned yesterday really about breaches as well, and said that it could put the broader plan to return to activity in serious jeopardy. So you'd have to hope that everybody is adhering to the rules. And Damien, we've just had a text in, and there's nothing better now than hypothetical formats, but this texter wants to know, what would you think of a provincial championship instead of a league and then an open draw championship?
Whoa. Oh, I think fundamentally that's a great idea, and I think it's an idea for the future. But I think for this year, I just think the the simpler and straighter we can keep it. Like, there will be creativity in designing the league this year. There's no doubt about that. Like, you'll have regionalised groups and you could have maybe different options with the hurling. But I think really, it's just about getting the championships played this year. And I don't mean that in any disrespectful sense. I mean, there'll be great championships, but a linear line will do me fine this year. But I think what the listener or texter has on his or her agenda is actually a great idea, and it's one that the GAA will probably look at long term, medium term maybe, medium to long term, but short term, I just don't see much deviation from last year's script, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Straight knockout for football and one back door for hurling, and they got over the line last year. They did really well to do that, you know, and that can't be underestimated too.
That's for sure. Okay, Damien, thanks a million. We will chat to you soon, no doubt. We're going to take a very quick break now, though, and then Fiona Coughlin is with us.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Okay, a lot going on in the rugby world, with Irish supporters narrowing in on the Women's Six Nation, which gets underway in only 11 days' time. We're joined by a former Irish skipper who's done it all in our game. From Triple Crowns, Six Nations, Championships to Grand Slams, Fiona Coughlin, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Donica.
Fiona, we've been drip-feeding into this, really. Adam named his squad a 35, and there was good excitement because of, obviously, five new caps. But then we've seen Ciara Griffin doing media last weekend, or this yesterday even. Just how excited are these players to get back on the pitch, Fiona?
Look, they haven't played a game since last October, and I suppose at every juncture they came to, the games were postponed or cancelled before Christmas, and then the Six Nations originally was postponed to this point, so they're just delighted that it's actually going ahead, because I think there was probably doubts in their head whether this competition was going to go ahead, and they've had so much training. I think they've had up to 20 weekends together since they last played, so you know it's time now just to get on the pitch and play.
So Fiona, it is a different format. It's much more condensed and it's kind of in its own window now. So there's going to be two pools of three teams. They will face each other once, and the sides from the corresponding positions in each group then meeting on a Super Saturday finals day. And the winner of the match between the two pool winners, me and Donica love these by the way, will be crowned champions of the 2021 Women's Six Nations. So it's different. How do you feel about this whole new format, and also the fact that it's moved away from the men's game?
Yeah, so I suppose originally I wasn't too happy that it was condensed, but due to COVID and there was potential World Cup qualifiers that needed to take place, that they had to condense it. I thought then when the qualifiers were postponed, they might go back to the extended format, but they didn't. So look, it is what it is for this year. I'm glad Ben Morrell, the CEO of Six Nations, said at the launch the other day that it's not going to, hopefully not going to stay in this condensed format. It is just for this year. And with regards to the window, the new window, it potentially is really good for the women's game. All the games are being shown live on TV. RTE obviously have been shown all the Irish games, but across all the countries they've been shown. So that's a really good positive to get more eyes on the game. So yeah, positive and a negative to it really, but it is what it is in the year that it's at. So we just have to maximise it, and Ireland have to go out. They play Wales first up and then they play France, and after that see where they'd be. I think similar to previous years, they should be looking for that top three finish.
Okay, so like they're not playing for a little while, and there are two games this weekend. We're going to get to them shortly, but let's start with Ireland, because as you said, they've been training for quite a long time. There's been a lack of consistency over the last while with them, Fiona, and probably a lot of eyes on them just to try and figure out what progress they've made. How do you think they're doing, and what do you think they need to achieve this Six Nations that would count for success?
Yeah, look, I definitely think 2020 was an improved performance on previous years. You know, they got the wins over Scotland, Wales and Italy, the three games they would have targeted. They had a good defensive performance in the second half against England. So there definitely were signs of improvement. And I've heard the girls speak a lot about their defence improving even more under Ciarán. So that needs to be a step up. But it's their attack that has been letting them down. And the change at number 10, I think we're up to eight number 10s at this stage that have been trialled through Adam Griggs's time in charge. So it's about someone cementing that position going forward and hopefully towards the World Cup. So Hannah Tyrrell was there for the last game, hopefully that she'll stay there and be given an opportunity to develop in that position, and the Irish attack will develop from that as well.
We've seen Hannah being incredible in many positions that she's played, but do you think that's the right call? That's the place for her to drive the ship at 10, or would you look at some of the new caps coming in?
Yeah, look, I suppose some of the other players that were given opportunities there didn't really stand up and take it, and on top of that they probably weren't given the time either. Hannah, one game out, it's a bit hard to tell. She obviously is a skilled player. Some of the new sevens players coming in, obviously Stacey Flood is there. She played predominantly nine in the sevens game, but she probably has the skill set set up. And Eve Higgins would have been a player when she was 16, so that must be about seven years ago when I first saw her playing, that I thought she was going to be the next in line to play 10 for Ireland, but she went into the sevens game. So I'm not sure if they're looking at her there or if they're looking at her in the centre, but certainly has the skill set, but again hasn't played a huge amount of 15s. So if they're put into that position, that they're given the time and the opportunity to develop, that it's not just a game or two and then it's the next, I think that's key, vital area for Ireland.
And Fiona, obviously we know that they haven't had an awful lot of rugby internationally or even at home because of the pandemic. How difficult will it be for them to almost hit the ground running, I guess?
Yeah, look, I suppose every country is the same. It's just that they'll be meeting Wales next week when Wales have already had a game, so that ring rustiness will be gone. Look, you're training, you're playing those internal games. They can get a bit of feisty at time, but nothing compares to that actual international game, and not even having a friendly to warm up for it would be unusual for them. But they've talked a lot of talk about how much they've improved and how cohesive they are, so it's a matter now of let us see it on the pitch. So hopefully we will see it in 2 weeks' time against Wales.
The big area of concern, and we've seen it in all rugby at the moment, is discipline. And you know better than anyone, your first game back, your travel height is a little bit higher than it normally would be. That could lead to red cards in the modern game, couldn't it?
Yeah, I hope the way they were training, that they were strict on themselves, and if they had I'm not sure if they had a referee in camp or the coaches were refereeing, that's something that they were very strict on, because we've seen the way it's changed the men's Six Nations games with losing a player, and you just don't want to risk that when you've only got a couple of games. They have 3 games in total, so you will need to keep every player on the pitch. So I'm hoping that's the way they've been training and something that they've been conscious of, in order that they go into this game with that fully in their mind, and that it's almost habitual now that they're tackling low and that's the norm for them.
Well, at least they'll have 2 games to watch beforehand as well, so they'll know exactly what is required of them from a refereeing point of view. So the 2 games on this weekend, England, Scotland, France, Wales, and let's start with France and Wales, because Ireland will be playing Wales when they do get their campaign up and going, and Wales are a team that will probably know a lot about them because of Sophie Spence.
Yeah, Sophie Spence is in there as an intern coach. World Rugby, brilliant initiative to put intern coaches in any team that's qualified for the Women's Rugby World Cup in order to promote female coaches in the game. So she'll have played with a number of the players and know them quite well. But I'm sure she's firmly focused on Wales and what they can do. They've obviously had changes, new players in, but again, some old players coming back into the fold there. So it's always a tricky one to go to Wales. I always hated going to Wales. It was the worst place to go and try and get a win. And 2 years ago, Ireland were totally outplayed by Wales over there. So it's important that they bring their form from 2020 into that game. But they'll learn a lot about Wales this weekend from the French game.
Do you think, Fiona, with the inclusion now of this, are we going to see an awful lot of these new caps? It's brilliant that we're using the sevens programme, but do you think it's going to lead, Adam, to changing the game plan, changing the way we play?
No, not really. Like, I suppose if you look at those players, like Bavin Parsons has been in the squad now for the last number of years, and they would have been hopefully trying to get the ball into her hands because she's been one of the most exciting players that we've had. Ireland are never the biggest, most physical team, so they need to move the ball around and play a tempo game. So I don't think it'll be a huge change of game plan for them. Like, my concern with the sevens players coming in is just the lack of time that they've had in the 15s game, whether that be a club or international level. And I think it might actually work in their favour for this championship, because they've been in so much in camp and that's all they've been concentrating on since last November. But I think as it progresses next year, when things are back on track and you've got World Series and you've got, you know, the WXV, which is the new Women's World 15s competition, that'll be too much. You won't be able to transfer players over as easily, that you'll really have to have 2 separate squads. But hopefully they might get some short beneficial gains from it from this championship.
So England and Scotland then is the other game that is kicking off this weekend. So are England the team to beat, do you think, still, even though they've lost Katie Daly-McLean and are struggling to find a fly half?
Yeah, I think they still are. They just have that depth in numbers across the park. Yeah, last year they played one of the November internationals against France without Katie Daly-McLean, and I think it was Harrison who stepped into the 10 position, and she did a fine job. They did a good win, and then the next week Katie was back in the helm, and it was a tough task against France. So France on their day can certainly match them, but England just have that depth, and they've just been playing at a higher level consistency, where France dip at at vital times. Like last year they drew away to Scotland. So England are definitely the team to beat, but they do have chinks in their armour. I don't think their scrum is at the level that it should be at for a team that's ranked one or two in the world. And again, that out-half position, they need someone to cement it down.
I think it's hilarious that the inconsistency and not knowing what France will turn up is also applied to the women's team. And as you said, it was they had a great 2018 and have been absolutely struggling since then to get that consistency on the pitch. So England, Scotland, call it for us, Fiona.
Oh, England will win it well, I think.
And France, Wales?
Yeah, it's France at home, so I put France down to win it.
Barely. Right.
Well, then Ireland will play Wales the following weekend, so we'll be talking about that again next week. Fiona Coughlan, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll check in with you again ahead of that Ireland opener. We're going to take a very quick break, and then we're back talking Olympics.
With Green Farm, a quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, with the Olympic Games on the horizon, we caught up with swimmer Shane Ryan to ask him about Tokyo and how his training is going. And I started by asking him what it's like being an individual athlete during COVID.
It's been kind of difficult because during the first lockdown, I lived by myself for 3 months during that first big lockdown over a year ago. So, I mean, that was pretty tough. But, I mean, the good thing is it's like I had a really, really good support staff around me here at Swim Ireland. And, you know, like we had Zoom calls. We had, like, you know, certain weights we got from the Sports Institute. But it was just more so just having the mentality of just, you know, like keeping yourself on a schedule, keeping yourself on a routine. And I found that, like, you know, that really, really helped, and just kind of taking it day by day, doing little things, you know, because, like, each little goal will just help build, like, momentum and have that kind of that snowball effect. You know, you push a little snowball down the hill and it ends up to being a bigger snowball. And I really thrived during that because, you know, I set myself on a routine and, you know, took it day by day and just tried to do little things each day, and it really helped me.
Shane, you mentioned the support there from the support group, and we always put it down to strength and conditioning or the big rocks, but can you give us some detail on the small little things, like the routine you mentioned there that, you know, that the Swim Ireland helped you with?
Yeah, so, I mean, like, you know, I'm at the High Performance Centre here in Dublin. Our coaches here are very, very good. You know, it's sending every Sunday, they send out a schedule of what we're doing for the whole week, you know, what type of practice, how much we're doing. Even with the weight sessions, it's the same exact thing. So it was, our coach, Ben Hickson, our head coach here, he just wanted to continue that. And why not? You know, like, why waste, you know, 3 months, you know, just sitting in the house and not doing anything? You know, like, we made a decision, you know, that everyone is going to be on the call at, like, you know, 9 in the morning, and we're doing a core session. Then we had game night, like, once a week. And, you know, we had even had, like, you know, lifting sessions as well, like our coach would call. And he would just watch, you know, me doing a certain, like, you know, a hang clean or a deadlift or a bench, and be like, here, you need to watch this, don't do this. And it was good, you know, and, like, we had that routine, and it was just great that, you know, that they set that up. They were really good at, you know, they would, like, give some guys some stick about, you know, missing a Zoom call, because it was just like practice. They took it just as serious. And then the coaches always checked in on us, so it was good.
It sounds like it was much needed and you got a lot out of it. But I have to say that the last year, just in terms of watching and waiting to see what was going to happen with sports events, has been a bit of an emotional roller coaster as kind of things got cancelled and then put back on again. And that's just from Donegal myself being two sports fans. So I can't even imagine what it was like for an athlete, somebody who was working towards an Olympic Games, to see the goalposts changing so much.
Yeah, no, it was definitely difficult, but, you know, I kind of had to take a step back and realize it's like, I'm not the only one in the situation. Like, yes, it's such a negative vibe once our Olympic trials got postponed and then the Olympics got moved. It's like, I had to take a step back. Either I can be an athlete and just dwell on it, you know, and just be in a dark cloud, or accept it for what it is and still work hard and take the opportunity to realize I have a whole other year to train. And here with the Somaliland, like with the younger guys here, they have a whole nother year to train and, you know, capitalize on their mistakes and capitalize on just, you know, doing things right, and just become better swimmers, you know. And, you know, during this whole time, yeah, it was a really struggle, but everyone seems to be a bit mentally stronger, because I know I am, because we've been through that and, you know, and we're still kind of going through it, but we're more used to it. So I think I'm stronger, some Ireland are stronger, and, you know, if you're like, you know, going through this, it's like, just take it day by day, and you know it, there's going to be an end date, you know.
So as well as being mentally stronger, you're also physically stronger, I'd imagine. You've bulked up now to 93 kilos, which you feel is your optimum weight.
Yeah, during the lockdown, I worked out 4 hours a day. I had like a little stationary bike, and I would just throw a movie on or play some video games. And then the Sports Institute here on campus gave me some weights. And I was just like, why not? You know, like, if I can't get into the water, might as well just work out. And yeah, came out pretty lean and ended up doing really well from there on out.
Shane, like most sports, you can't carry a bad pound. And how useful has that weight now been to you in your swimming?
It's been really useful, because I used to be a bit heavier, to tell you the truth. In 2019, I got up to like 99 kgs, which it was just bad weight. It just felt like a slug going through the water, basically. And we thought at the time, we thought it was good. But, you know, I'm 6'6", so it didn't really seem like a lot of weight on me. But 93 is just like where I'm at, because I'm lighter, I'm leaner. You know, just I'm able to recover better as well. So that they were really big. So now I'm just kind of maintaining that weight and just trying to stay strong and healthy. So, yeah. Been good.
So, Donners, you're around 6'6 as well. What's your optimum weight?
Yeah, I played.
I know it's a different sport, obviously.
Yeah, 100%. But I played in England. I played in Munster at 113. But in England, I went up as high as 120, because the game was totally different. Oh. I'm down to kind of 110 now, and I'll be honest. And Shane, you'll know it's power ratio. It's what you're talking about there. I wonder how, you know, there's a lovely spot for every athlete in any sport where they're really efficient. And it sounds like you found that spot.
Yeah. I mean, because, like, we tried it, you know. I've always been, like, you know, very, very skinny kind of guy. And, like, when I got up to 99, it just didn't look right. Yeah. And even when I was, like, when I first moved over here to live here again, back in like the beginning of 2018, it was just like, I was 94, but I didn't look as good as I am now at like 94 93. Like, I look a lot bigger now, a lot leaner. Like, I'm capitalizing on my nutrition, the recovery, and it's optimal for me right now.
It's really interesting, because I know at the last Olympics you were 84 kg, which is obviously a lot lighter. And when you're looking back at that, like, what are you thinking about yourself?
I'm a little string bean. So skinny. Yeah, it's just like, looking back, it's just kind of crazy on like what your body can do and like can adapt. And I remember I was like going from, like, you know, from high school into college. Like, I never lifted before. I never did doubles. Didn't even take swimming serious until I moved my first year in college and ended up gaining like 15 kg in 8 months and dropped a significant amount of time. So from there, it's just like, it's all about learning curve. Because, like, as you get older, your body's going to react to something different. And, like, you know, you're not going to be able to eat the same foods. You have to eat something different. You're going to have to do different training. So it's just all about adapting and doing what's best for you.
Shane, by the sounds of it, you're in brilliant physical condition. But what about technically? Have you had the chance to work on that side of it, or have you been able to use kind of imagery, or what have you done to stay on top of that?
Yeah, so, you know, with that, you know, swimming is just all about the technique. You know, you can be really, really strong, benching like 120 in the gym, squatting like 200 kgs, like no problem. But like, that's great. But if it doesn't really correlate to the water, it doesn't really mean anything. So technique is so crucial in swimming, because you need to find like the feel of the water, you know, and just be able to move as much water as you can efficiently and as fast. Every Thursday we always get someone to come in. We film underwaters, like our dives, our swim, our technique, and we have it up on a big screen on the deck there. So that's great that we have that, you know, like available to us, because a lot of places don't really have that, and it's great because I'm a big visual learner. I like to see what I'm doing, and I'm like, oh, I'm coming over with my hand over my head too much. I need to move out here and I feel a lot stronger and more connected. So it's been really good.
So you're heading into an Olympics all going to plan. Who knows what's ahead of us? But I think that it looks like it is going to happen. You're a world medalist. You're a European medalist. You've been to the Olympics. So you kind of know what's ahead of you. Does that give you some comfort?
Oh, my God, yeah. No, it definitely does. It's a huge, huge difference. You know, not only just like the body weight, like my mentality, my mental side is just completely different from, you know, from four or five years ago. I'm a lot more experienced, you know, and it's like life right now is a lot easier as well, because, you know, I'm lucky enough to have like a car sponsorship, which last time I was here, I had like 50 euros to my name. I only had a bike as transportation, and I lived really by myself in like an isolated area. So, I mean, like it was hard, but it was the struggle that I sacrificed to become an Olympian. But now, like I said, I'm sponsored with Windsor Motor Groups. So I have Circle K as a brand ambassador for them as well. So luckily this has been a lot easier, and like, you know, I'm not thinking too much about all those little things now, and I can focus more on my training and recovering and all that.
Shane, what's the dream goal? So, you know, I know we're talking about Olympics, but for you, you know, when you look back at, you know, your career, what would you like to take away that was a massive achievement for you?
For me is to come definitely, like, you know, put myself in a situation where I'm contending for an Olympic medal for sure. Because, I mean, I'm a world medalist. I'm a European medalist. So now I think the next one would definitely be an Olympic medal. And I think this could be everything. If everything falls in line, I can stay healthy and keep, you know, climbing up that hill. I think things could work out really well, and not only just for myself, but just for Ireland alone. Like, we have so many relays that could possibly qualify as well, which is exciting. We could be sending the biggest team of swimmers to the Olympics from Ireland.
That does sound very, very exciting, and it'll come around very quickly. Shane, thanks so much for joining us. Shane is a Circle K Here for Ireland ambassador, and they have launched the Keep It Lit campaign, giving customers the chance to double up on their support of Team Ireland athletes. Each day from now until April 25th, Circle K stations in counties will double the value of digital coins when customers scan the Circle K app or their Play or Park loyalty tag in store. Visit circlek.ie for more details.
Game on 2FM.
Now, I have to say that it is great to be talking about the Olympics in such a positive way, because it does look like they are going ahead. And I'm delighted to say that we are joined by Ireland hockey player Chloe Watkins. Chloe, how are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. It is positive, though. It does feel like for so long we were chatting about whether or not it would happen, but I feel like we're kind of on the home stretch now, and it's full steam ahead, and looks like, anyway, things are going to go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it really feels like we've turned a corner now, and we can see light at the end of the tunnel, and it certainly feels like that in our camp, that we're really coming to the business end of things now, and we're only a few months out. So things are looking really positive, and everyone has, you know, a lot of excitement that's building within the squad coming into the summer.
Chloe, I did get a giggle when I saw Katie Mullins, your captain, saying that she saw it as a gift of an extra year to prepare and get well. And that sums you up, that you would have that mentality of embracing it and using it to fuel you to what's going to be a brilliant Olympics.
Yeah, I think, you know, after the initial shock, I suppose, that it was postponed, we quickly regrouped and kind of reassessed things, and once everybody was able to organise themselves for another year, it was just about focusing on the positives and what we can control, really. And it just gave us another opportunity to work with our coach Sean Dancer and really kind of hone in on his attacking style of play. So it's been great now.
Chloe, know that there is a huge amount of competition for places within the squad. What's it like now as things are starting to heat up and, as you said, getting to the business end of it?
Yeah, there's lots of competition, healthy competition within the squad, that's for sure. It's definitely a good thing, you know, everybody's pushing standards and you need that for everybody to raise the bar and push the team ultimately as well. So it's going to be an interesting few months and, you know, I wouldn't like to be picking the team, that's for sure. But as I say, you know, it's healthy and there were some really good performances from the GB series as well and some really promising young players coming through. So it's an exciting time, I think, for the team.
How important was it to get that series of games earlier this month?
I think it's probably going to be really important. I know, you know, we're not looking to peak just yet or anything, and certainly GB are the same, but I still think to psychologically get the win over them is something that we can take huge confidence going into the summer, just knowing that we've broken that barrier finally. We've been waiting for so long to get the win over them, so it was really great to do that. And yeah, hopefully we can just take confidence from it and know that we can do it again this summer.
We were speaking to Roisin Upton after that big win over GB, but we ended up chatting about the acclimatising and the heat chambers. I don't think she'd gone in yet, though. Did you get to do it?
Oh, yeah, we certainly did. We were up there for the rest of the week in the heat chambers, so it was a bit grueling, but it was great to have the facility and be able to use it and get a bit of that under our belt because it was a cold enough winter, so we needed the training under conditions. But yeah, it was a bit grim now, to be honest.
Chloe, just for you yourself there, in that kind of conditions, you know, you're always involved in those pressure moments. We've seen them against Canada. Have you a way of dealing with it? Have you put a process in place for yourself, or is it just, no, I'm just going to get on with it?
I think the more you can, you know, practice under those conditions, the better. You just learn to manage your emotions a little bit better. And you can kind of draw on experiences as well. I think whenever I'm in those positions, I just try and stay as focused as I can. And it's about blocking out any of the distractions that are happening around the pitch and that kind of thing. But if we can get a little bit of heat training in now, it'll definitely help that because, you know, heat definitely plays a factor in you know, raising the emotions and getting a hot head and that kind of thing. So it's good to get a bit of practice in now to help us this summer.
Do you enjoy those pressure moments when it's all on you? I know it's team sports, but I always thought about our goal kickers and yourself. When all your teammates and all the preparation lies on your shoulders?
I don't necessarily see it like that, but I certainly don't mind being in those moments at all. But I think certainly in shootouts and things like that, it's kind of collectively you're bearing that load with the keeper and a few of the other takers, and it kind of dilutes it a little bit, I suppose. But I do think, you know, if you can do a job, if you're feeling good on the day and you're feeling confident, then it's actually your responsibility to put your hand up and be able to take one. And equally, if you're not feeling like you're confident taking it, it's just as important to say no. So I think, yeah, it's just a responsibility. If you're able to do it, you have to do it.
Well, he definitely kept us on the edge of our seats plenty of times anyway and brought us a lot of enjoyment and inspired a lot of people along the way as well. And the plan will be anyway that hopefully you do it in the summer. So what's the plan for you guys over the next few months?
So we've got a European Championships coming up at the beginning of June, which is actually also a World Cup qualifier for us. So there's a little bit of added pressure there. But we're hoping to get maybe some more matches in April and May if we can, but it's proven quite difficult. So we're just training away at the moment. But June is going to be our first focus because then it's a pretty quick turnaround to July and the Olympics. But, you know, it'll be a perfect preparation tournament for us because the top teams in the world are playing in Europe at the moment. So it'll be a great test for us.
Okay, well, best of luck over the next few months, Chloe. It is a really exciting time, and hopefully everything will go to plan for the summer months. Chloe Watkins, really appreciate you taking our time. Chloe is an FBD ambassador, and as primary sponsors of Team Ireland, FBD are proud to support athletes like Chloe as they chase their Olympic dreams.
Yeah, fair play to them. Okay, that's it from us. Massive thank you to Ronan Lawler and Laura Lee Davis. We're back tomorrow night at 6, but Tara Stewart's up after your news.
And we have some very special guests I'm going to tell you about just before we go.
Yes.
We have the match on Friday, so we're going to be doing a lot of our weekend previews tomorrow. We've Stephen Ferris on rugby, we've Alan Cawley, we've Jane Mangan, and we've Jeff Shepherd.
It will
get much better
than
that. It will be a great show. As Donegan said, Tara Stewart is up next.